This is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Golhatkar. You can watch the show on Free Speech TV nationwide and listen to it on Pacifica radio stations and affiliates. Eric Prince, the notorious founder of the military contracting company formerly known as Blackwater, is making the rounds of media outlets to push the Trump administration into changing U.S. policy in Afghanistan. Mr. Prince, whose foreign mercenary corporation is now called Academy and who now chairs a Chinese-owned company called Frontier Services Group, has repeatedly promoted the idea of an American viceroy in Afghanistan to address the U.S.'s failing war. The war in Afghanistan is the longest official war that the U.S. has waged against another country. It has become a sinkhole for American tax dollars and only resulted in greater instability and violence. But Prince's Blackwater was under scrutiny 10 years ago when its employees were convicted of killing 17 Iraqi civilians in Nisour Square in Baghdad. In fact, last week, a federal appeals court threw out prison sentences for three of those convicted and ordered a new trial for a fourth. Joining me to help analyze what exactly it is that Prince wants for Afghanistan and whether Trump will bite is Sean McFate. He's a senior fellow at the Atlantic Council and professor at the National Defense University and Georgetown University's School of Foreign Service. He's also the author of a new novel called Deep Black that centers on a military contractor. His earlier book was called The Modern Mercenary, Private Armies, and What They Mean for World Order. Welcome to the program, Sean.
Thank you, Sonali. It's great to be here.
So as I understand it, it was back in June, right, that Eric Prince sort of emerged onto the scene with this Wall Street Journal op-ed where he decided to, I suppose, brazenly make the case for why the Trump administration should perhaps hire his company, although he didn't come out and say it, and privatize the Afghan war. He said, we need a Douglas MacArthur for Afghanistan, used the term viceroy several times. How do you understand what it is that he was proposing?
Well, you know, I was a private military contractor for many years in Africa, and then I got out to study it in depth. What he's proposing for Afghanistan is nothing short of colonialism. And he envisions himself, in my opinion, as that viceroy backed by a large mercenary army to dictate to Afghanistan what he wants it or the U.S. government wants it to do.
So he then, in July, he was approached by the Trump administration to basically, I think him and one other person, to offer proposals. Of course, we shouldn't be surprised, right, that Trump would fall for this sort of thing. First of all, he's a business-friendly president, so the idea of privatizing something that the government is doing is probably tempting. But also, isn't Eric Prince promising to slash costs for a very expensive war?
Yeah, and also let's not forget that he's politically connected to Trump.
Right.
His sister is Betsy DeVos, the Secretary of Education, and there are allegations that he was trying to make a Russia, you know, Trump backroom deal in Africa back in January. There's a lot of conflict of interests here. I think what happened is Trump reasonably asked for outside the box solutions, and this is an outside the box solution. And allegedly, it's being championed by Steve Bannon as well.
So what would this American viceroy look like in Eric Prince's view? And how would it be different from simply a U.S. military commander? I mean, the Afghanistan war is a disaster. And I think his analysis of the fact that it is failing is correct, right?
Nobody's arguing. Everybody agrees that Afghanistan is a disaster. It's his solution, which is worse than the problem at right now. His solution would be like dumping jet fuel onto a bonfire. It makes no sense.
So what would this viceroy do that would be different from what a U.S. military commander would do?
So his model is based on, as he describes it himself, on the British East India Company. During the age of imperialism, the British East India Company was Great Britain's instrument of colonialization, and it was run by a viceroy who was a dictator, like an emperor. And it would have mercenary armies to enforce the rule. The government of Afghanistan, Kabul, would have to answer. It wouldn't be a sovereign nation anymore, it'd be like a colony. And the idea that Prince has put forward is that this viceroy would have absolute control of everything that goes on inside of Afghanistan. And those who disagree with him, he would have a mercenary army to deal with them. And that is deeply un-American. And it's also what we had American Revolution War to prevent. So his solution is nothing short of colonialism.
So let's actually watch Eric Prince make his case in an interview that he did on CNN with Aaron Burnett. He basically, this is how he laid out his solution for Afghanistan.
So you are proposing a solution, and this solution, you know, you've written about it in the Wall Street Journal op-ed, a private military force. So I know you don't like the word mercenary. Explain to me why it's not the right word.
Because actually it wouldn't. What I'm recommending is a rationalization. They still have 9,000 U.S. troops, another 4,000 NATO. They're rotate every 6 to 9 months. So when those troopers leave, all the experience and a local knowledge that they had leaves with them. There's another 26,000 contractors in country. This plan takes it from that overspend down to a much smaller number. The Afghan forces need support at the battalion levels. Battalion is the basic unit of combat there. That's where the rubber meets the road. And the Afghans are continuing to lose dozens and dozens, thousands per month. Embedding mentors at the battalion level, attaching to the Afghan army, does not even meet the threshold of the UN definition of mercenary. So they're not mercenaries. They would be attached as long-term trainer advisors. Imagine them as a
Are they military employees of the United States, or are they people that you're their contractors?
They would be military employees of the Afghan government. Imagine them as a skeletal structure that provides leadership, intelligence, medical, communications, and logistics support to all those Afghan battalions so it works reliably. Second, they need air power. Less than 40% of the U.S. provided air power to the Afghan forces still even functions because the maintenance and training has been such a failure. So they need governance support, they need mentor support, and they need air power, all attaching to the Afghan government, which doesn't meet, you guys like to throw the mercenary word around, they're not mercenaries.
But then what are they? If they're being paid by the Afghan government or U.S. taxpayers, but they don't work for the Pentagon?
Under the U.N. law, no, they don't need to. If we want to Afghanize this is the longest war in American history.
Are they Americans?
They could be Americans, they could be foreign nationals, they could be NATO allies, there can be from the global soft community of professionals, most of whom have served in that country already, that have a lot of experience, that want to go back.
And that's Eric Prince speaking to Aaron Burnett on CNN, sort of becoming a little bit defensive about the term mercenary and explaining his solution for Afghanistan. My guest, Sean McFate, knows a thing or two about private military contractors. Sean, he is explaining that you're going to need to support Afghan army forces at the battalion level. But that's essentially what the U.S. is doing right now, right? I mean, what it sounds like Eric Prince is saying is that instead of having U.S. military advisors training Afghan forces, which has been happening for 15 years now, you would have a private military contractor doing that advising and training, et cetera, that answers to this viceroy rather than the U.S. government. I mean, how would that be that much more different from what the U.S. is doing right now, except simply less accountable?
It's illogical. He's taking the same, taking the same broken strategy, and he's saying we can do the same broken strategy more cheaply, but there's higher risks. I'm saying there's higher risks. So there's no reason to assume that if it hasn't worked for 15 years, it'll work in the next 15 years. Second of all, he says they're cheaper, but he hasn't laid out any of his cost structures. And I've done this a lot in Africa. I've raised armies in Africa as a private military contractor. And the thing that makes us so risky is what happens when these contractors get out of control. I mean, we all remember Nisour Square in Iraq, where some Blackwater guys killed 17 innocent civilians, and they were not court-martialed, they were just sent home. That's the issue. And the bigger issue is quality control. Where are these guys gonna come from? They're not gonna come from just America. They're gonna come from all over the world, from Honduras and from Uganda and from the Philippines, where military labor is cheap. But they don't have the same level of training as U.S. Army soldiers. And so this idea that this is somehow cheaper in the short run, we risk more Nisour Squares in the long run, and that would be catastrophic for the U.S. and for the region of South Asia.
And of course, already the Afghanistan war is kind of out of sight for most Americans. And it's never really been that popular either in the last several years. Transitioning, sort of privatizing this war would make it even less visible, right?
it would make it less visible, and that's part of it. So contractors don't count as casualties, and they don't count as boots on the ground. So the White House could surge 30,000 contractors in there, quality unknown, and Americans would have even less recourse to know what's going on. And the difficulty is that these contractors would be fighting under the American flag. And what they do will reflect the United States of America in the international community's eyes. It'll be like Mysore Square, but much bigger.
Right. So if they do harm, say, Afghan civilians, what law do they follow? Afghan law, international law, no law?
Viceroy law.
Yeah.
And so that's what's scared everybody.
Let's talk about words. I want to get to the issue of the word viceroy, but let's also talk about mercenary. Obviously, Eric Prince hates that word. You wrote a book called The Modern Mercenary, Private Armies and What They Mean for World Order. What do you make of this term? Is Eric Prince indeed proposing an army of mercenaries?
Yes. He's not. I mean, these guys are going to be civilians they're civilians with firearms in a conflict zone doing military things. That's what a mercenary is.
What about viceroy? Let's see what Eric Prince has to say when Aaron Burnett of CNN challenged him on the colonial background of the word viceroy. Here is that CNN interview again.
When we use the word, though, obviously you point out it is a colonial word, right? The definition is a ruler exercising authority in a colony on behalf of a sovereign. In that case, Trump would perhaps be the sovereign, Afghanistan an American colony. I mean, it's
a loaded word.
I mean, are they talking to you about this? Are they open to it?
I've talked to plenty of Afghans about this. When they understand that we're not there to colonize, but merely that viceroy, that lead federal official term, is someone that will rationalize so we don't go through a commander every year like we have been, or a different ambassador every 2 years, so there's been a complete fragmentation of unity of command. That has to change.
Sean McFate, Eric Prince there saying that Afghans understand we're not here to colonize. And that was basically it. He simply brushed aside the colonial implications of this term. But I mean, he's the one who raised the term American viceroy. It's just amazing.
It's incredibly sophomoric. And this is exactly why we can't put the fate of Afghanistan into Eric Prince's hands.
Now, what is the likelihood that Trump would actually bite? Because we are seeing in the news that he is actively considering this. And, you know, we should even look at how Eric Prince is kind of seducing the president on this. In a later op-ed that he wrote in USA Today, he used the term bankruptcy. He's saying basically this would be like a reorganization in the war where you would simply, go through like how a company might go through bankruptcy. And of course, we know that Trump has been through bankruptcy, at least 4 times. Is this him sort of speaking in a language this president understands?
Yeah, he is. And he's doing the hard sell. And he's making this sound like it's just a question of cost efficiencies. And of course, war is much more complex than business. Countries are not companies. This is not just about, finding a cheaper way of doing business. This is life and death. And we don't really know what he has in mind. He's not explained his figures. And Trump is considering this. I mean, this idea, which was so laughable when Eric Prince initially proposed it in early June, has not gone away. It has been championed by Steve Bannon. My sources tell me that the Pentagon is dead on arrival in the Pentagon. But with President Trump, who really knows?
The Pentagon spokesperson, was a former senior defense official, told the Daily Beast the Pentagon is not going to privatize the Afghanistan war. So if opposition to privatization of the Afghan war comes primarily from the Pentagon, what are the odds that the president, who is technically the commander-in-chief, can just push this through? Currently, the U.S. military commander in Afghanistan, General John Nicholson, his proposal since January has been to increase the number of troops to Afghanistan, 20,000 more troops, which, Obama tried and failed to do. I mean, just throwing more U.S. troops at it is also not going to work. Is this going to turn into a clash between Nicholson and Trump?
Trump can fire Nicholson.
Yeah. And he sort of hinted to that, hasn't he?
Truman fired MacArthur. This is his prerogative. He's the commander in chief. He could fire Mattis. He could fire H.R. McMaster. He is the authority here. And so we should be very clear about that. there's nobody in Congress, there's nobody anywhere who can, you know, who has the authority to override President Trump on this issue.
Wow. So we're basically one person away, one, let's just say, unhinged person away from the decision to privatize the longest war the U.S. has ever waged.
And that would send a huge signal to the world, because what people don't realize is that mercenaries are coming back. Most of military history is actually private military history. And the last 300 years of just national armies, that's anomalous. And the world's going back to normal. So in the last couple of years, we've seen Nigeria hire mercenaries to kill Boko Haram. We've seen the UAE hire mercenaries to kill Houthis in Yemen. Russia has hired a lot of mercenaries in Ukraine and Syria. Oil companies hire these mercenaries as well to do things. So mercenaries are making a comeback. And if the world's superpower employs a mercenary army headed no less than by a guy like Eric Prince, who's going to do that next? China? Other countries? This sets a very dangerous tone for the future world order.
And does the use of mercenaries allow governments to have a deniability in terms of the actions that they're promoting? I mean, if you said, you know, sort of Russia hiring mercenaries in Ukraine, they can say, well, it's not Russian soldiers. Yeah, but if they're paying private soldiers, essentially it's Russian government policy, but they can play both sides, if you will.
Exactly right. So mercenaries offer plausible deniability, in some ways more so than the CIA or special operations forces. And that makes them very attractive when you wage war in information age. That's why, if you want a so-called zero footprint operation, you go to the private sector. You don't go to government forces.
Now, aren't there already private contractors operating in Afghanistan in a pretty serious way? I mean, we knew, of course, that Blackwater was very active in Iraq with the Nisour Square massacre. The company's reputation was tarnished enough to where they changed the name. And then it's kind of fallen under the radar. But what about Afghanistan? What is the role of private military contractors so far in Afghanistan? And what can we learn about what would happen if the entire war was privatized?
Well, we know this, is that companies like DynCorp, where I used to work, and who's also lobbying for this, they've been operating in Afghanistan since the very beginning. They do training and equipping, which is exactly what Eric Prince is suggesting. They have also done, guarding the president of Afghanistan. They have guys with weapons who do military-like functions. But so far, they've been in a larger U.S. mission where they are the minority, and it's mostly U.S. troops. I'm talking about the trigger pullers. Now we're going to a potential model where that's all there is armed private military contractors. And what's to stop them from going into business for themselves or becoming a warlord, the biggest warlord of Afghanistan, or taking the viceroy and stringing him up on a bridge? Or maybe they could be bought out by a Pakistani ISI or China or Russia. That's the supreme danger. We shouldn't be fooled by Eric Prince that this is somehow cheaper because we're paying cheaper wages. We're assuming huge risk that could be extremely expensive, not just in terms of money, but in international order and reputation and people's lives.
Isn't Eric Prince chairing a company that is heavily invested in by China, Frontier Services Group? I mean, what is he envisioning a role for himself through that company, or does he want to start his own company? How ambitious is this man?
When I talk to Eric, he says he doesn't imagine himself being the viceroy. No. But I don't think anybody's buying that, right? If you remember Nisour Square, when Blackwater got in real trouble for basically massacring civilians in Iraq, he was on the Hill saying, I'm a former SEAL guy from the U.S. Navy. Nobody's more American than me. He wrote a memoir, a ghostwritten memoir, about how American he was. And then he turns around and works for China in Africa, arguably against U.S. interests. So if that's not a mercenary, I don't know what is.
Now, going back to this idea that his proposal is extremely colonial, Donald Trump has actually proposed or suggested that Afghanistan's vast and untapped mineral wealth is a great reason to remain in Afghanistan. He's sort of, through his business perspective saying, if we're going to be in Afghanistan, why don't we exploit the minerals there? And it's true. Certainly the U.S. Geological Survey has found huge resources under the ground in Afghanistan that have yet to be mined, but that would be the sort of cherry on the neocolonial cake, if you will, or pie or whatever, for the mineral wealth to be the reason for the U.S. to hire a mercenary army. It would be Dutch East India Company all over again.
Exactly. And that even is a metaphor. So colonization is all about taking over a territory, administering it for the purpose of wealth rent extraction. And that's what we're doing here. And also, let's also not be too, you know, rosy-eyed about all this. There's a lot of minerals in Afghanistan. There's a lot of minerals in the Congo. The problem is it's too expensive to get to market. You'd have to build huge railroad systems in Afghanistan. That's not going to happen. Or you can ship it out through China.
Now, some have said that the failure of the Afghanistan war can be measured by how poor the roads are. There was a interesting Salon article about the fact that the U.S. has poured billions of dollars into rebuilding roads in Afghanistan, most of which have been blown up by IEDs. Throwing more troops in Afghanistan is not going to work because Obama tried that and it didn't work, and it's just a repeated experiment that has failed. If that's not going to work, and if Eric Prince's solution is not going to work, do you have any thoughts as to what the U.S. should do? I mean, why not simply actually end the war?
You know, Afghanistan is called a graveyard of empires for a reason. It's not just the U.S., it's the Soviets, it's the British, it's everybody, you know, except Alexander the Great. It is foolishness. You know, can you imagine sending one's sons or daughters or brothers into that war? For what? It's really a hopeless war at this point. And I think what we need to do is exit the war. And this idea that, well, if we do, you know, then the terrorists win. Like, the terrorists are already all over South Asia, the Middle East, Northern Africa. They can stage attacks in the U.S. from many of the world's fragile or failed states. Afghanistan should not be privileged. I think U.S. interest in Afghanistan by some policymakers is little more than gambler's fallacy, meaning that we have already so invested that we can't leave. That's the wrong reason to send our young men and women into the crossfire.
In a way, the U.S. role in Afghanistan simply adds to the violence, right? You've got the bombs from U.S. And raids and the U.S. presence, drone bombs in Afghanistan. Then you've got the U.S.-backed warlords. You've got the Taliban. Now you've got the Islamic State. What about ordinary Afghan people? I mean, they never seem to enter into the calculation.
Yeah, they are the victims of all this, right? I mean, the U.S.'s war efforts in Afghanistan have not produced, you know, all the billions, arguably trillions, we're going to invest by the end of the day in Afghanistan. At the end of the day, Afghan lives have not measurably improved. We have to ask ourselves, why are we there? So what can we hope to achieve? And certainly a mercenary army under a colonial model is not the solution.
The argument that Eric Prince makes against leaving or the U.S. completely quitting Afghanistan is that countries like Iran will step into the vacuum. What do you make of that?
Iran's already there. I mean, this idea that this hasn't happened already is absurd. He would also say, well, it would hand, you know, the Taliban a big propaganda victory. That's already happened, too. And who's going to die so that, you know, who else is going to die so that the Taliban don't get a headline? It's a really warped moral calculus, in my opinion, that Prince is promoting.
Finally, Sean, in the last few minutes of our conversation, you've just written a new book. It's actually a novel. Your first book was The Modern Mercenary. Your second book is called Deep Black. It's a Tom Locke novel. Can you tell me briefly what this book is about?
Sure. Well, I was a private military contractor, some would say mercenary, for many years. And I originally wrote a memoir about it to sort of pull back the curtain as to what that world is really like. And it's much more weird and dangerous than most people think. But my agent was like, no. You need to turn this into fiction so you don't get sued to death. And so the Tom Locke series was born. Tom Locke is a mercenary who leads a mercenary team, but they have a moral conscience. They're kind of independent actors, which creates a lot of moral ambiguity, which is realistic. And this book takes you deep inside the ISIS caliphate. It's actually based on on-the-ground reporting from friends and colleagues of mine and sources I have there. And it shows you what the world would look like, the coming world, if mercenaries engage in warfare, and that role's just around the corner, actually.
And do you have any regrets about the role that you have played?
I have mixed feelings. I have mixed feelings about it. We did amazing things. I helped stop a genocide in Burundi and Rwanda. Mm-hmm. We helped take, you know, get Charles Taylor out of Liberia and dealt with evil warlords and build armies that have protected innocent people and rule of law. There's many great things that I've done. But I also saw a great many things that give me a great deal of pause about what happens if you have this new tool, because mercenaries are incentivized to start wars for profit, to elongate wars for profit, to complicate wars for profit. And a world awash of mercenaries is a world full of more war.
Right. It's like the private prison industry. Their product is more prisoners. And so the more prisoners there are, the more business they have. Well, Sean, I want to thank you so much for joining us today. You've also written a response to Eric Prince, which we will post on our website so people can read it. Thanks so much.
Thank you very much, Sonia.
My guest is Sean McFaith, Senior Fellow at the Atlantic Council, also a professor at the National Defense University and Georgetown University School of Foreign Service. He is the author of a new novel called Deep Black, and his earlier book was called The Modern Mercenary, Private Armies and What They Mean for World Order. We've been talking about a proposal by Eric Prince to privatize the Afghan war. I'm Sonali Kolhatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com, where you can sign up for our daily newsletter. Also find us on Facebook, Twitter, iTunes, and Vimeo.